The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine. Plus, global business, finance, and tech news. The Bloomberg Business Week podcast with Carol Messer and Tim Stenebeck from Bloomberg Radio.
Jammin'. A little Pat Benatar. Man, I love that song. Kind of takes me back. You are listening and watching Bloomberg Business Week and talking about hitting with your best shot. I feel like, man, the jobs report this morning, just kind of firing on all cylinders.
Would you call it a Goldilocks report?
Well, exactly. Like, I feel like it kind of checked all the boxes that the Fed needed to do. And so let's just get right to it, because our own Molly Smith, she's Bloomberg News Economics editor. She's a fan of tennis, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But
I think she's actually off today.
Are you off?
No, I'm working.
You're working? No,
I actually went on
like
the
it.
Bloomberg Markets show this morning, and they said that for every time someone mentioned it was a Goldilocks report, that added to the shot count. So in case anybody is keeping track...
It's like,
right.
It's like
that's
a big day.
That's a sip of a honey deuce for you.
I will take that.
It's like the AI shot game and then the Goldilocks economy shot game.
Yeah.
Let's talk, though, the jobs report. And we say Goldilocks because it kind of, right, it's not falling apart, but it's easing. So walk us through it. What was important?
No, I think that's exactly the way that we've been describing it, too. Just like this. Actually, my editor came up with this one. I really like this. A controlled cooling of the job market. Yeah. So we've got a moderation in hiring, which has been the continuing trend. And I wouldn't be surprised to see if the print that came in today was revised lower a month later, because that seems to be happening just about every month that we get a jobs report. We also saw slower wage gains and higher unemployment rate, but for what we would call a, quote, good reason, because it reflected more people coming into the labor force, so greater participation.
I heard Mike McKee, international economics and policy correspondent on Surveillance, talking about this morning. The bankruptcy of the Yellow Trucking Company, 30,000 jobs not included in this month's report as a result of what we saw there. How should we read into those one-off scenarios? Because when we learned of Yellow's bankruptcy, we also knew that, thanks to the economic data, there are a lot of trucking jobs out there for these unemployed truckers to go get.
They very well could have been scooped up already. And, you know, speaking of one-offs, it's hard to tell, but however long the Hollywood strikes are going to continue, that also subtracted from payrolls quite a bit. Yeah. So that 187,000 number for the added jobs in the month would have been even stronger if not for the effect of those two events. We saw really a pretty broad-based gain, especially though in the service-producing industries and in healthcare and some of these industries where we've had a lot of those labor shortages, so still continuing to climb back, which is a good sign.
What I thought was really wild and cool and interesting is people coming back to the workforce, right? The labor participation rate, and also what they talked about was the participation rate for prime-age workers in terms of it rebounding. That to me is significant. The people on the sidelines who were like, "I'm out," are all of a sudden back in.
Yeah, it took them some time. I don't know what these people have been doing. We've all obviously been working, but they're back now. And a lot of them are back. So, and that's really helping to ease the wage pressure picture a lot. So more of when we hear supply and demand of labor coming back into balance, that's where you see it happening.
So if you're a Federal Reserve Chair, Jay Powell, and you're sitting there at your Bloomberg terminal at 8:29:59 this morning, waiting for those
numbers.
saying your prayers, waiting for those numbers to come across.
At 8:30:29, he is like, "I'm out to the beach. I'm
good." Well, these
Maybe
numbers,
he's here today.
These numbers hit. What are you thinking?
I think it's just, I don't know what more you could really ask for. This is like showing exactly the soft landing case that he's been preaching would be possible and has been his base case all along. So, you can't take too much of a victory lap, and they're going to be careful not to, but we'll hear from more Fed speakers next week. And then predictably, the call right now is that the September decision is going to be to leave rates unchanged.
Help me, though, because I'm looking at a 2-year note that definitely popped up. right? There's my charts all along the yield curve, the 5 and the 2. Right now, the 2-year one at a yield of 4.86. I've got a 10-year at 4.167. And we definitely did see a bit of a pop in the equities, and they pulled off. The higher rate moves, though, is telling us what?
I mean, I think that you still have November on the table. That's you can't be ruled out. Jay made that very clear at Jackson Hole last week that they have to keep their options open. And I think most economists right now would tell you that November is very much a live meeting, even though September more or less seems locked in to hold steady.
And in terms of the market pricing and rate cuts for next year, still happening?
Maybe a bit less so now.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the moves today just very much showing September being unchanged, pretty solid.
Before, you want to talk more, Erica?
One more.
Okay.
Higher for longer, how long does that mean?
Oh, don't we all want to know, Tim? If I knew the answer to that, I wouldn't be sitting here.
Offense taken.
She would be here. She wouldn't be talking to us.
She would be in one of the booths.
She would actually be like
a box.
Right.
The president's suite.
That sounds nice.
One more, just to tack on to Tim. What's the next focal point in terms of economic data points?
Oh, goodness. Not a whole lot going on next week. It's really more on the Fed speaker front. So hearing from a few of them next week, and then they're in blackout before the September FOMC meeting. So it would be interesting to see just, you know, we've seen some of these factions coming about in the committee of, like, where the doves are, where the hawks are, how people are interpreting the data. So we'll give it a nice clear picture next week of, like, where everyone stands.
Should we talk tennis?
Let's talk tennis.
So,
oh, okay. Well, Molly, I mean, 50,
week, tennis expert.
50 weeks a year, you know, I see you around the office, and we're just basically, we're just doing a countdown to these 2 weeks.
Yes.
You told me before the show, this has been, like, the best week of your life running around the U.S. Open. What have you seen? What are you excited to see tonight? Who's on your list of winners?
I really have had the best week. Nothing can take away from this. I've been absolutely glowing. So,
you love the sport.
I do. I've played forever. I used to teach. I watch. I mean, the reason why I got into journalism, I was hoping to be a tennis commentator more so than an economy one. But I've got a nice combination.
All right, well,
right now.
We got about 7 minutes where you can be a tennis commentator.
Oh, great.
Right now
I
with
won't
us.
Waste it. Okay. I just came from, before I came over here, was watching the top men's doubles team in the world. I think they're doing well up in the third set right now. This is Neil Skupski and Wolkoff. Those are the two names sometimes I get tripped up on. But they're playing a Colombian team, and it is fiery in there. Some of the South American crowds, you know, it is. I see our producer right now. He's pumped. it is crazy. I think the best match I've probably ever seen in my 20-something years of coming to the U.S. Open might have been yesterday when I watched a Brazilian woman play an American woman in the singles on court 17, which is one of the smaller stadium courts, but the atmosphere is electric, and you better believe the Brazilians were there in force. Obviously, the Americans were as well. It was fire. This was Taylor Townsend and Beatriz Haddad-Maia.
Fire meaning what? The strength, the force, the power, what?
I mean, the sheer game, of course, the shot making. Also really rare to see two lefties going at it. So that was a lot of fun. And just, you know, I think it also, for a lot of people who come here and maybe you're not really familiar with tennis, you don't watch it the rest of the 50 weeks of the year like I do, you think of it as maybe a more, quote, gentlemanly sport. You know, it's quiet, the little golf clap.
Yeah.
This was like a soccer match. Or football, but you know, it was insane in there. Like, the people were up on their feet after every point.
Do you like the first week or the second week better?
First.
I do too.
Why?
Undoubtedly.
Because
why?
I think the biggest secret of coming to the U.S. Open is, like, stay out of ash.
Yes.
And just go around to the courts, the outside courts. You see the best tennis players in the world. You can get up close to them. Sometimes you walk up to courts, people are in a third set or a fifth set, you've never heard of them, and you literally get to be in the front row.
Yep.
And see the best tennis you've ever seen.
Which speaks to what we talked about with the team over at IBM in terms of what they are doing is a lot of the other courts don't get a lot of attention, but they're taking now the footage and they're creating AI-generated commentary.
Right.
And that they're finding people want that. They want to know what's going on and on some of the other courts around here.
I think what a lot of casual tennis fans probably also don't have a great grasp of is just how good you have to be to part of my language, but suck at the U.S. Open. If you're a singles player and you lose in the first round, you still were among the top 128 players in the world. A lot of them had to go through several rounds of qualifying to get in there. You're still going to see amazing tennis, and it's a lot better than, like you said, Tim, going into Ash and seeing a blowout in the first week.
Can we talk women?
Yes.
Because now that, all right, Venus was here.
But she's out, unfortunately. She is out. And then Serena, we know, not here. Yep. I think I saw her last match last year, but we never know, right, whether or not she could come back.
Serena, you think?
Yeah, I don't know.
She just had her second kid a couple weeks ago.
She did just have her second kid. What are we looking forward to in terms of the next generation when it comes to women? We know that there's already a few names out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think like there's it's really never been a better time in recent years to be a fan of American's tennis, and the women are really doing so well on that front, the men as well, but I'm really excited about Coco Gauff and Jess Pegula. Like everyone else, I saw them play in doubles together the other day, actually. I think they're the only players in the world right now who are top 10 in singles and doubles, each of them. Really impressive. Not easy to do. So they are really just like riding a ton of momentum from the summer hard court season into this U.S. Open. The other top three seeds are also doing incredibly well on the singles side. So it's not, there haven't been too many big upsets yet. I think most of the women are really I'm just having a blast watching them.
You know, it's pretty amazing. You mentioned Jess Pegula. She's also doing mixed doubles. Like, she's out playing mixed doubles today.
She is.
I was like, wait, wasn't she just playing last night in Ash? Why is she out here today? And then I saw it was mixed doubles. She's doing everything.
Yeah, and, you know, some players do that. I think, you know, I've listened to what some of the commentators have to say about it. A lot of them will tell you, you know, like, great to play doubles, you know, really helps your singles game, gets you at the net a lot more, your reaction time, just getting more reps in general. But the mixed being, maybe that's a little too much, especially if you're a serious contender in the second week of the singles draw.
But the problem is, here in New York, some of these matches don't end until 1 or 2 in the morning.
Right.
So problem.
You're the problem for the players.
It's great for the fans.
It's the problem for the players. Yeah. And some of those players, if they have a doubles or a mixed doubles match the next
two
day.
Two in one day. Yeah. Ben Shelton today, too, doing a doubleheader.
It's pretty incredible. How old are these guys, though? They're young.
Oh, yeah. Ben's 20. Yeah. So
you can do that. Remember doing all-nighters and getting up? Same thing.
Alcaraz is 20.
Alcaraz is 20. Jess is 27. Coco's 19.
We mentioned Serena having her second baby. There is, though, this trend, and you write about it, too, of these women who've had babies, and they're coming back.
I think it's great. Hopefully, you know, we're seeing that also to tie in the economy angle. My boss would love that. In the, in the women's participation rate, that more women coming back to work as well. So obviously this kind of work being much more demanding after you've gone through labor. But this it's amazing to see Carolyn Wozniacki is playing tonight. Alina Svitolina still alive. It's amazing.
Yeah, Wozniacki's match earlier this week was amazing.
Yeah, to see her beat Petra Kvitova, you know, a top 10 or so player in straight sets. I mean, she's back. That was incredible to see.
Yeah, incredible journey. I mean, not just having a couple kids, but also her battle with her health issues that she's been battling over the last few years. I mean, the game she played the other night was incredible. Looking forward to seeing her tonight as well.
Speaking of battles, just 30 seconds left here. The pay issues. I know the USTA has done a lot in terms of the Open, but there's still some work to be done.
The thing that people have to keep in mind is that it's the WTA, the women's tour, and the men's tour are two separate bodies. They have their own prize pools. They dictate, their prize money. They dictate that separately. So optically, yeah, it doesn't look great when you're at a tournament that they award a different amount to each player. But it's not as if one governing body is deciding that the women are earning less than the men.
All right, we got to leave it there. Oh, wait, it's the Tennis Channel calling. Oh, wait, it's ESPN calling. Wait, it's CBS Sports calling. You were really good. That was really fun.
Let's stay here all day.
ESPN's just right over there. Just walk on over. And
economics editor, sports commentator.
A little bit of everything.
She does it all. Molly Smith, thanks so much. Enjoy the rest of it.
Thank you.
You can tell you're having a ball. Molly Smith here, Bloomberg News economics editor, on site with us at the Open. We're just getting started on this. It's Friday. Can you tell? Stick around, everybody. We're coming back. This is Bloomberg.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE. You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern. Listen on Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, and the Bloomberg Business app. Or watch us live on YouTube.
Harold Masser, along with Tim Stenovic, live at the U.S. Open here in Flushing Meadows, New York, of course, just outside Arthur Ashe. We're going to get back to tennis in just a moment, although I feel like, Molly, what an incredible job of kind of melding the job market, the economy, and then, of course, talking tennis here. Right now, though, we need to do a little bit more on the job market.
Yeah, let's talk about it. It was a employment report that we got today that showed that U.S. hiring picked up in August. Wage growth slowed. It offered a mixed picture of both resilience and moderation when it comes to the labor market, pretty much what Jay Powell wants to see.
Yeah, he's got to be pretty happy and feeling pretty confident.
Well, with us, and to give us an idea of what she's seeing when it comes to jobs here in the U.S., we are very pleased to have back with us Amy Glazer, Senior Vice President at the staffing and recruiting agency at DECO. She joins us on Zoom from Florida this afternoon. Amy, how are you?
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, Tim. I'm great.
Yeah, we're doing pretty well here. It's good to have you with us this afternoon. So what were your big takeaways from the employment report versus what you're seeing at ADECO?
Yeah, so I think what we're still seeing, it's definitely a talent-driven market, although you did see unemployment tick up 30 basis points, you know, that being offset by the labor participation rate really just continues to send mixed messages. But those sectors that showed as growing are what we're seeing, hospitality, still growing in demand. Healthcare is hot right now. Another, you know, some of the other industries cooling a little bit, but really looking to surge ahead again in September as holiday hiring gets hot and heavy.
You know, I'm really interested in what you said about this being a talent-driven economy. As Carol and I have talked about over the last few months, it really seems like, I don't know, Carol, there's been a shift with when companies demanding workers come back to the office. It's one that you and I predicted, that the work from home thing wouldn't last forever. And as soon as there was this imbalance between supply and demand, as soon as that eased, we would start to see companies wanting their employees back in the office. Amy, what makes you say that it's still talent driven?
You know, I think as long as you've got 1.5 openings for every single job seeker, they still have lots of opportunity and are willing to kind of ask for what they're looking for. And those employers that are offering flexibility and being agile right now are the ones that are really winning. We are seeing the return to the office, but we're also surprisingly seeing a stronger appetite from a lot of job seekers to return to the office, especially if it's in that kind of hybrid type of environment.
Hey, so Amy, give us a reminder for our audience about the type of, you do staffing, you do recruiting. What kind of jobs typically, is it white collar, is it office? What kind of jobs particularly are you working, or does it cross a lot of different worlds?
So I'm part of our general staffing sector, so it crosses a little bit of everything from blue collar to white collar, professional services, healthcare, creative and marketing. So we pretty much run the gamut of temporary to full-time permanent placement. So we do have the opportunity to see a really large spectrum of items going on in the market out there.
All right. So where would you see, would you say in particular, because it sounds like you are pretty optimistic, but and that the worker is still kind of in the driver's seat, or those job seekers are still in the driver's seat. Where in particular are you seeing strength? And I'm also curious about older workers, because I feel like that labor participation rate was also the result of maybe some workers, maybe older, maybe they had some savings or maybe what have you, and were like, I didn't need to come back in, now I'm coming back in. And we'll find out more, I'm sure, as the time goes on. But tell us about what you're seeing in that front.
Yeah, so I think we're still seeing strength in healthcare. And it's funny, I was talking to my mother last night, who retired as a nurse, and actually returned to the workforce. So I think she's one out of every six of those retirees that have been considering returning to the workforce. And it's for a couple different reasons. Number one, inflation, looking for ways to supplement income. But number two, a lot of folks that retired during the pandemic have really started missing that sense of purpose that you feel when you go to work every day, and that sense of community and camaraderie. So it's offering the opportunity for the retirees to return to the workforce. What we are seeing is a trend for retirees is more of a part-time return to the workforce. So although they're coming back, they're not giving up their days on the golf course. They're coming back and working a couple days at a time or a mixed shift.
So the narrative that emerged in the last couple of years of people during the pandemic permanently removing themselves from the workforce, is that still the case? Or is everything that you mentioned sort of making that so it's been turned on its head?
I think it's been turned on its head a little bit. And I think, you know, inflation certainly has been driving that as folks are concerned about how they're going to keep up with their overall costs. So I think, you know, we're continuing to see a lot of creativity. I was talking to one of my customers the other day who had found a set of school bus drivers that were willing to pick up this odd shift from midnight to five in the morning and then go drive their bus route to supplement their income. But it was a huge benefit to the employer, who genuinely usually had a hard time attracting that third shift workforce. So creativity, flexibility are really the name of the game and who's going to win this race moving forward.
What about wages?
Yeah. So wages, we are seeing definitely a slowdown in terms of the huge, big sign-on bonuses, retention bonuses, perks that were being offered. We're seeing employers continue to put it kind of in more of that base wage rate and supplement it by non-monetary perks, whether it be flexible schedules, the ability to work from home, enhanced benefits, enhanced mental and well-being, financial offerings. So we're seeing quite a bit of things in that nature. We are expecting as seasonal hiring starts, there's still going to be acceleration within wages in that blue collar hourly workforce sector, especially in quarter four this year.
Is it still a good time for to ask for a raise?
It's always a good time to ask for a raise if you've got a solid reason behind it. I think, you know, recruiting has been the name of the game for a long time, but employers have really settled in on retention and keeping their top talent as being a priority. So my recommendation is if you've got the data and stats to support your request, that employer, the ROI on you is often worth a lot more of a vacancy and having to replace that cost of turnover.
Just going to say our crew, everybody's ears perked up when it's like, is this the time to ask for a raise?
I like when you said yes. Always a good time. You've got to have the reasons though, Carol.
But having said that, it's interesting because I feel like, you know, we know employers, you know, Amy, want to hold on to workers, and they tend to, what do we call that?
Labor hoarding.
You know, holding on to workers, not wanting to let them go, because the cost of finding a worker is pretty expensive. But I do also hear about this quiet quitting or, you know,
quiet firing,
like stuff going on so that employers do reduce their workforces. What are you seeing on that front?
Yeah, I think it just varies by employer, by sector, different portions and pockets along the U.S. Those were some really big buzzwords we heard for the last 12 to 18 months. And there's not been a lot of noise, so kind of quiet on that front as well.
Okay, so I guess my last question is, because I oftentimes go to that JOLTS number when I'm talking about the labor force, and I always get pushback from people that say, okay, why do you say there's 1.5 jobs for every, you know, person out there who's looking, when, you know, nobody's going to move from Toledo, Ohio to Florida in order to take a restaurant job?
Right. I think that's where the mismatch occurs, Tim. And when you look at it, there is 1.5 jobs, but is it in your skill set? Is it in your market? You know, we have this conversation about skill or will. Do you have the skill to do the job? Is it in your location, or do you have the will and desire to move towards it, or to maybe take a step down or learn a new skill? So I think that's where we still continue to find the disparity in those numbers. And as you know, the population continues to move, it's still forcing employers to be quite flexible.
All right, we're going to leave it on that note. Listen, so good to catch up with you. Have a great holiday weekend. So appreciate getting some time with you. Amy Glazer, Senior Vice President at the Staffing and Recruiting Agency ADECO, joining us on Zoom from Florida. So, you know, a continued strength.
You know, a little later in our program, we're going to be talking with the person who oversees all dining here. And I'm going to ask a lot about staffing and if they've been able to get sufficient staffing here.
That's a really good point. Right? I mean, because you need a lot of people to make all this stuff happen.
It's expensive here, too.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Business app, and YouTube. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
Love Tom Petty.
I know.
Such a loss.
I know. But great music that we get to share with. I know. I share with my younger daughter. You're going to share it with your kids, I bet.
We already are sharing Tom Petty and a lot of like music from back in the day with our kids.
Yeah. Don't.
We got a record player.
Don't play. Oh my God. Yeah. Don't play Barney, guys. I mean.
No.
Yeah.
We don't.
There's
don't
much
worry.
Better music to raise your kids
worry.
On. Sorry, Barney.
Yeah.
I don't want to get in trouble here.
Barney's not offended.
Hi everyone. Welcome back to Bloomberg Business Week. Carol Masser along with Tim Stanovic on YouTube, of course, streaming on Bloomberg Originals and of course on Bloomberg Radio here at the U.S. Open. We want to talk about cryotherapy, a mixed reality, tennis game, espresso martinis, NFTs. They're all here at the U.S. Open, courtesy of American Express. And we've got Shiz Suzuki with us, VP of Global Brand Sponsorships and Experiential Marketing at American Express, sitting right next to us. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having us at your party.
It's a great place to be this week.
Well, you know, it really is. And Tim and I talk about this as we walk around. You know, it really is an experience. It is absolutely first and foremost about the folks, the incredible athletes, the matches. But what you guys do at American Express really makes it a cool experience. How do you think about the event every year?
Now, it's so amazing, right? And to your point, certainly this is around world-class athletes and in the tennis, but it is, there's so much more to it than that as well, right? It's music, it's, you know, they've got music, they've got food and wine festival, they've got all sorts of things. And frankly, for us at American Express, it is about that experience. It's about making the experience here even better for our card members and prospective card members. And so it's always about that like holistic experience. I mean, you know, and if we had to kind of summarize it up, we start with access to the actual tickets themselves back in May and June.
Which I understand sold that really quickly.
Sold very quickly. It's a great early indicator of how things are going to go. And we offer that for our card members. We come on site and we do some really great things experientially. IRL, we have a 20,000 square foot fan experience over by the East Gate. And then we've got some other fun things as well, whether that be in terms of, you know, great offers or, you know, other things. So, yeah, it's a holistic experience.
So, Shiz, sure. I mean, no question, American Express, this is an important event to American Express.
Yes.
It's 30 years at the U.S. Open. Obviously, everybody knows American Express spends a lot of money on this event. But draw the line from spending money here to getting more people signing up for platinum cards.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, right, why does any brand invest in sponsorships or partnerships at all? I think at the very basic level, right, it's really about building relationships. It's building relationships with your customer base of today and the customer base of tomorrow, so your prospective customers as well. And so for us, the investments that we make in a partnership, certainly like the USTA and the US Open or any other sport, music, you know, the things that we invest in, it is about that. It is about being where our card members are, where we think our prospective card members will be, and then bringing those benefits and really unique experiences to life. Because at the end of the day, we want people to walk away saying, gosh, like, it was a great experience, but it was made even better because of, right, American Express in that moment or that thing or other.
Well, full transparency, you've got two Amex members, right?
Yeah, that's me.
Thank you.
Over 30 years. I got it, like, I think my last year, senior year in college. I don't know when you got yours.
I got it in college as well.
And, you know, what's interesting is I think about the benefits and – there's a lot of reasons why I know it works for certainly our family. But I think about the pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. Certainly impacted what you guys offered in terms of services because nobody was traveling, nobody was doing things. How do you think about coming off the pandemic, but here we are again experiencing things? How do you continue to evolve services that maybe you offer here, but it becomes a much bigger, broader thing, a part of what you guys do?
And I mean, for us, right, we have so many types of benefits, certainly even from a sponsorships perspective of what I work on. We have incredible events all around the globe. In fact, July, we just came back from Wimbledon, right? So we're at that Grand Slam as well. We're in all sorts of music festivals, Coachella, American Express presents BST Hyde Park to, you know, all sorts of things. And so every single one of those, we look at what is the fan base, what's the true authentic way to show up and a way to make that fan's experience better. That's the key. It can't just be from an Amex point of view. It has to be from that fan-centric view. And then bringing those things to life.
What do you guys do, though, with, like, I think, like a Taylor Swift concert, which we tried to get tickets, like, or like a concert that's so popular and you know... Yeah. You see it, early access, love using it, but sometimes it's just over.
It's not early enough for you.
It's not early enough.
That's like the truth.
And I'm sure you have clients who are coming up and saying, I've been with you for this many years. Like, how do you deal with that stuff?
I mean, listen, so when we think about our investments with music, it's really, I'll call it a 360 approach. So an artist like Ed Sheeran, somebody who we've also worked with, right?
Yeah.
So we've done certainly like the pre-sale ticket access, but then it's about things like pop-up experiences in various cities. I don't know if you remember, at the very start of his tour earlier this summer, there were a couple cities where we had these pop-up experiences, and guess what? He actually popped up with them.
Love that.
He did like a pop-up concert here in New York for the New York one. He did a pop-up concert, acoustic guitar in the middle of Soho, totally unplanned, by the way. We shut down the street. It was incredible. It was all over social. Went viral. And guess what? He personally loved it so much. He did it in Dallas, LA, went on and on. And then if you think about the length of the tour and other things, guess what? It's the things that he's passionate about. We co-create things with the artist.
Yeah.
Again, fan centricity in mind. And that's it, right? That authenticity, I think, carries through for fans.
There's also this balance, though, when it comes to these experiences.
Yeah.
You want people to be able to access them.
Yes.
But you don't want too many people there.
and you mean the exclusivity, perhaps?
The exclusivity part, yeah.
And
we're seeing this play out, and I know this is not your purview at Amex, but we're seeing this play out in airports all over the country.
Yeah, absolutely.
With the changing rules around airport lounges because they're just overrun with people post-pandemic, given our demand to get out there, given our demand to travel.
Yeah.
How do you balance it?
Yeah, I mean, well, I think this event is a really great example of that. We've got something for everyone, right? We've got experiences, like at the fan experience, the first floor is completely dedicated to all fans, right? So the glow tennis, the cryofacial,
you don't have to be
other,
an American Express
You don't
member.
Have to be Wait, an American
Express
member.
Tell me about
Express
that cryofacial.
Member. It's incredible, right? Like, listen, like, you think that, listen, like, elite athletes, right? Like, they use that for their recovery. Well, guess what? We are elite athletes the duration of the U.S. Open tennis as well. And by the way, I get the question, like, can I do it over my makeup? Yes. Yes, it won't mess up your makeup.
I don't have a ton of work makeup on.
No, I'm like, so just pop
so
in.
So can anybody walk in? That's it.
Anybody can walk in. Now, the second floor, you ask about kind of like the benefits, right, at different levels. You know, the upstairs is for any card member. And then you get exclusive access to things like the Lavazza espresso martini or the frozen honeydew.
That's us, kiddo.
I know. Well, we're all still on the clock,
like
okay?
right, so there's different. Yeah. And then if you think about Platinum or Centurion card members, we have the Centurion Lounge. And so that's a separate area, right? Again, like.
Carol,
so,
you may be Platinum, but you're definitely not Centurion.
How do you know?
Just so you know. Because you wouldn't be sitting here with me if you were Centurion.
We can hook you up, Carol. we'll get you in there.
I know people. No, but it's really cool. Like, I was thinking about the list. We said mixed reality tennis game. We talked about NFTs. Are you guys really selling NFTs?
Well, we're not selling them at all. No. Again, so actually the first floor, the fan experience.
Yeah.
And so it comes in the form of like a digital collectible.
Okay.
But like, so there's one there. There's another somewhere else here on the grounds. The more you collect, the more offers and benefits it unlocks.
Oh, that's fun.
And so you could be a non-card member and still collect them. If you're a card member, it actually unlocks more benefits for you.
See,
so there's some discounts
it's who
and
you
other
know
things.
What you have, what card you have.
I've heard that before. are people, you know, we talk though, you know, with the crypto winter and with the prices of cryptocurrencies coming down from all-time highs over the last couple of years, the interest in NFTs is not what it was 2 years ago. Are you still seeing adoption of this?
I think that there is interest, right? And so I think there's, you know, the the creative behind the actual collectible as well. There's a story to be told there. Yeah. There's a connection that we have. There's that, and then there's a mural that all fans can also participate in curating. Fun. So there's some connective tissue there. So a lot of people love the art part of it. But for us, I think there's something interesting, right? Because as we think about, again, giving benefits and others to card members, that connective tie back to, so it's not just about the collectible. If you're a card member, it unlocks something for you, more benefits.
Is it more competitive than ever when it comes to having a card? I just think about the growth of cards.
Yeah. I mean, it's competitive here. You have a competitor here that's a sponsor with their own lounge.
Yeah, they have their own lounge. I mean, listen, for us, it's 360. I don't think you can walk very far, right? Even the shopping bags have Amex on
I've
it.
Seen them.
Every point of sale has Amex on. We have this Amex shop right over
you
here.
You have exclusive merchandise,
we
right?
do. We have exclusive merchandise both in the Amex shop as well as in that car member lounge. We have a partnership with Ralph Lauren. And so you can get exclusive customized merchandise from there that you can do right there, purchase it.
I've seen it. I've been like it. You've done it before?
We have.
And it's really cool. And it's like you see people just going in and doing it. I want to go back to something Tim said, and I think he asked or was thinking about, is just you do this. And obviously you guys choose sponsorships because in some ways it's got to move the needle, right?
Yes.
Or you bring in new card members.
Yes.
What do you see as a jump or boost? And I realize you can't probably share everything, but what kind of gains do you get in terms of card members?
No, absolutely. I think just, again, going back to that high level of building relationships, right? Building those connections. We do see that for card members, when they come out to one of our experiences, they are more like, they're more loyal and they're more engaged with our brand, which is great. And then for prospects or people who are not card members today, when they come out to experience us, they are more likely to sign up for us, with us, right, as a card member. And at the end of the day, it's that, right? You want better loyalty and more, right, more love from the customer base you have today. And then you want your prospective customers to be, you know, more willing to sign up with you. I mean, that's it.
But you're not going to give us a number, I know. But you sign up a ton of people.
We do. You know what?
New people are like, how would you quantify
it
if you can't give us a number?
Well, you know what? How about this? How about a trend, right?
Yeah,
like we're talking about NFTs and other and or, right? Like the types of like even music relationships, right? Like when I talk about like a Ed Sheeran or a Jack Harlow or actually we just announced a pop-up next week with Olivia Rodrigo. I mean, that starts to point to a certain demographic.
Yeah.
Right? And so I would say that our millennial and Gen Z customer base, that is the fastest growing like segment for us in terms of consumer cards acquired. And that was, I think we just publicly announced that in Q2 as well.
Yeah.
And so when you think about that, right, staying ahead of those, again, staying ahead of your trends, right, getting in there early, you know, from a brand level, just making sure that people,
So Shiz,
wait,
so,
can I just
say, go ahead.
On that, my daughter.
You want to talk about Jack Harlow?
No.
Okay.
But my daughter who's 20, I mean, her first card was an American Express.
Love to hear that.
She probably knows who Jack Harlow is, too.
So she probably
does. Yeah. Shiz, let's say, you know, it's getting to the end of the year.
Yeah.
You're sitting down with your manager.
Yeah.
How do you prove that this was a successful event?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, we have a lot of data. And so in terms of everything from, right, the number of people that have come by to engage with us, it's some of those data points that I mentioned about existing card members and prospective card members and what that starts to look like. We do a big comparison against, right, this is certainly an incredible, huge event that we invest in, but we're everywhere else too, right? U.S. Open Golf, NBA, WNBA, all the music and festivals and things that we've talked about. So, yeah, it's about looking at that. Have we surpassed last year's goals? Have we hit the goals that we thought we were going to hit?
Shiz, you know, one thing I do think about, because you do have, you know, the green card, you have the gold card, you have the platinum, and then you go, you know, the card that I don't have, according to Tim.
And maybe you do. I don't know.
what
if
I'm
you do, you should buy me some stuff.
All right. What I'm wondering is, do you think about different events to kind of grow a specific card, or is it just you think about the whole business?
So for us, we are actually within the global brand organization. So I think about the Amex, the brand, globally. And so that's why I mentioned like Wimbledon and some of the other events as well that we have around the world. And then we have other product marketing teams that do target. And so if you think about things like we have like by invitation only and some other like really, you know, targeted, I would call it, experiences that are out there. And so, yeah, it just depends on, you know, what that marketing plan might be across the board. But
like going after college, like my first card was a green card. I don't know what your first
card
was.
Same with me.
Yeah, like I was, you know, as a college senior and you guys were on campuses and stuff. So
Got
interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious about like how you target it that way.
Yeah. So the card member experience is certainly part of it, but your presence here is also for clients.
Yeah.
And there's an entirely different side to
right.
American Express. Talk to me about what happens behind the scenes, in the box at night, and who you're entertaining and what goes on there.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much simply like B2B hosting is what I would call it in the most traditional sense. But yeah, we do have a couple suites here. It's incredible hosting, right? And so, you know, whether that be for the day or the night session or other, it gives you such a really incredible opportunity to just like have time with your partners or prospective partners. And so, you know, everything that I've said on the consumer side, that still applies for the business side as well.
And I'd love to like wrap up with, if we can, break the love.
Oh, break
can
the
you
love,
talk about
yes.
this? Because I think this is about access. And anyway,
it is. I mean, you know, the factoid there is that since 2020, in the U.S., tennis players have actually increased by 33%. And so when we started to look at those
kind
trends.
Kind of blows my mind a little bit, right?
Because
everybody was worried. I felt like, you know, oh my God, where's the next generation?
Right. And then also, like, if you think about at one point, right, they were like, oh, is it a COVID thing? But actually, no, it keeps growing. It's for 3 years in a row. And then if you kind of stack on top of that, if you're a New Yorker, right, like, sometimes it's harder to find a place to go or you don't know where to go.
So
or other. And so Break the Love, incredible platform. And it's also, you know, we would consider a small business, diverse, female-owned, which is really incredible to support. And they have a collective of all sorts of tennis reservations that you can make, like in many demographics. For us, we've focused on New York again because the US Open is here. But we have 10,000 reservations on hold for card members for free. So for a set month, we've got that available for all of our card members. This is our second year in a row.
Right.
Last year, it was just, you know, it was like, hey, we've got spots reserved for you. And what we learned through that is people didn't want just the spots. They wanted to take classes. They wanted to like take part in things to make their tennis game better. So this year we brought that on. And so everything from like a Wilson tennis racket fit to like having classes and other. So, or if you just want to come play tennis, we want you there as well. So,
what?
Yeah.
Okay, 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Your favorite event that you do year round?
Oh, gosh.
You,
I mean, this one,
you can have
years.
Favorite kids.
I mean, 30 years. There's a reason why we're here. This is like homecoming for Amex, I think.
Oh, that's a nice way of saying it. Hey, listen, do you play tennis?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't either.
Hey.
And I don't play pickleball.
You know
but
what?
I love the game. I love the game.
You can come out here when the U.S. Open is not going on and play here.
There we go.
Shiz, thank you so much. Be well. Good luck with everything. Shiz Suzuki. She's VP of Global Brand Sponsorships and Experiential Marketing at American Express right here at the U.S. Open.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern. Listen on Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, and the Bloomberg Business app. Or watch us live on YouTube.
You know what's interesting is so much of what we see on the courts here at the U.S. Open often look, full of strength and athleticism at many times, so effortless and graceful. But, you know, you have seen players who definitely get hurt, and we've definitely seen that, Tim.
Yeah, we have. We actually even saw several players retire early this year as a result of injuries that they experienced during huge matches.
There's some extreme stresses and strains. And so someone who's been working with athletes, many, many others in general, including me when it comes to our feet, is Dr. Rock Positano. He has been on the staff at the Hospital for Special Surgery for more than 30 years. He's director of the Joe DiMaggio Non-Surgical Foot Service, at the Hospital for Special Surgery. He's also an author. We've talked about his book before here on Bloomberg Radio. Rock, it's great to have you here. And
you know him?
I do.
Oh, you do. Okay.
Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Carol.
And I feel like
it's
so great to have you. And I feel like we had a conversation. I always like to pick your brain about, you know, foot injuries, and you know, you do work with athletes. When we think about the athletes that play here, it does look so graceful at times, but it is, they're athletes, and they, a lot of stress on their, certainly on their feet, on their ankles. Talk to us a little bit about what they are seeing and what they are dealing with sometimes.
Well, first of all, the pro tennis players are probably the best trained, best conditioned of most of the athletes. If you consider that some of these matches could go 4 or 5 hours, it gives you some idea about the stamina that they must have. Forget about, you know, breathing and you know, and doing things like sweating profusely. I mean, musculoskeletally, it's a tremendous amount of stress and strain on the bodies of these superior athletes.
Why, you know, I made a comment to Carol, Doctor, earlier this week. I was out here Tuesday night, and this is, you know, I barely even spent any time in Ash. I was out on the outer courts. I did see Venus play on Tuesday night. But one thing that we noticed over and over again was almost every single player had tape somewhere on their body, mm-hmm. whether it was their ankles, whether it was their wrists. Why is that?
Well, you know, Tim, that's a very, very good question. I mean, taping provides stability. It helps to keep swelling down, edema reduction, we call it. It gives them a better, in the case of an ankle strapping or a foot strapping, better footing, where they actually have a better propulsion when they're trying to make a point. So in that respect, you know, taping is still one of the most important parts of the sports medicine orthopedic practice, okay? And yet it looks very simple, but as we both know, or three of us, I should say, know, you know, there's nothing simple about taping. It's not just haphazardly placed. It's placed in areas where stress and strain can be reduced. Areas where the muscles, tendons, and the ligaments insert, or where the bones are going. So taping has become really a very important part of any type of organized sports, whether it be amateur sports or professional sports. So, of course, taping has the same indications in other parts of the body as well, in the hand, the shoulder.
So I just want to...
It's all over the place.
But yeah.
Taping is part of it.
So, Doctor, it's not necessarily indicative that there's been some sort of injury there or there is some sort of recovery taking place. You're saying in some instances it actually provides an advantage.
Yes, because it allows propulsion, which means you're able to move on the ball a lot quicker. You're able to go lateral on the court or go back or forth. So it gives you that little extra, you know, jump, so to speak. It's sort of like a fulcrum, you know, and I think in that respect, they're able to get a much better jump. And, of course, their footing is better, and then they're less likely to invert their ankle or throw their heels out or whatever it may be. So, yes, so the answer to that question is that it's also used for, again, it's a benign form of performance enhancement.
So when you think about the intensity of the play, you know, it's interesting, Dr. Positano, that we talked with the folks at IBM, and they use a lot of data to give stats on the players and how they play, but they also, you know, are tracking how fast the ball is moving. And it's just interesting how it just feels like things get, you know, more ramped up. And whether it's tennis, whether it's football, whether a lot of sports, it does feel like the intensity of the play has just been increasing over time. And it also feels like the amount of injuries or the intenseness of the injuries has also been ramped up. Talk to us a little bit about that just in professional sports more broadly.
Well, look, again, conditioning is everything. I mean, I had the pleasure of knowing some very, very world-class athletes that played back in the 40s and 50s, and they would say the same thing, that they certainly did not have the analytics, so to speak, or the technology available to them to stay in shape throughout the offseason or throughout the season itself. And I think that's a big part of why professional sports has changed, is because these are ways of making these players be able to, A, be more effective in their play, but B, provide a safer environment. They learn about certain types of things, certain types of athletic wear, whether it be a brace or, in our case, a prescription foot orthosis that helps to stabilize the ankle. And I think that's a big part of what's happened with professional sports, is that there is this technology which many times does help, again, performance enhancement as well as injury prevention.
What can we learn as mere mortals from what the professionals do, Doctor? You see people each and every day who aren't necessarily professional athletes, who have recurring injuries of their feet. What advice do you give us?
Well, again, you know, having had the privilege of taking care of professional and elite athletes in all areas, professional football, professional baseball, at the U.S. Open, I think the most important thing is not to overdo something, which means everyone gets inspired around Wimbledon or the U.S. Open to go out and play a lot of tennis. And of course, it makes people feel good because they watch these tennis players on the court or the baseball players on the field, and they think they can go out there and just start to be full force. Well, it's not a good idea. I know at our center here at HSS, we find that many of these injuries involving the foot and the ankle are really because these people are not conditioned, and particularly the areas of heel pain and Achilles pain. And actually, I had a conversation with someone recently about, you know, pickleball has become a very interesting, you know, type of a sport. You know, I always kid around. I say that HSS is probably the mecca of pickleball injuries in the tri-state area. And, it's a form of racket sports. But again, you know, and I say this with all respect. I'd say right now we're in the middle of a pickleball pandemic because we're seeing all of these people coming in, particularly in our area, with heel pain, Achilles pain. I mean, stress fractures. I have my colleagues in the spine service telling me the same thing, that these weekend warriors, whatever you want to call them, they're coming in now with back sprains because they have to make these quick dips. So I think pickleball has certainly established itself right now as being, you know, a very popular sport. It's a lot of fun. But again, it's one of those sports where, it may be a smaller court, but with that smaller court, unfortunately, comes bigger orthopedic problems. And we're seeing more and more of that. And I think the conditioning aspect, Tim, is what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Forgive me, I didn't mean to interrupt. Katrina Adams, we were talking with yesterday, former head of the USTA and, of course, a professional tennis player, doubles player. And we kind of joked about pickleball and kind of made it sound like it was so easy. And she's like, it isn't easy. It's intense. And, you know.
Yeah, but you don't see her out there playing pickleball.
No, but it's.
Because she's a tennis player.
Yeah, well, it speaks exactly.
Well, you know, what people, you know, Carol and Tim, what people don't realize is that even though it's a smaller court, okay, it's a much faster game. There's more focus on the foot and the ankle. There's quicker pivots. You need quicker footwork, too. And I think, again, you're more likely to rupture your Achilles or tear your plantar fascia or blow your knee out because you're not conditioned and because your reaction time has to be significantly faster than when you're playing a nice game of civilized tennis, which is what you're seeing right now when these players are hitting the ball 130 miles an hour. So, again, you know, pickleball is a great sport, but going back, Tim, to your question about conditioning, that's the big mistake that people make. You just cannot go back on any sport, whether it be basketball, you know, tennis, football, whatever, and just think you're going to go out there and play your heart out. Because, again, you're not conditioned to do that, which means your muscles, tendons, ligaments, and bones are not, right, not accustomed to this type of a quick escalation, so to speak.
All right, we're going to have to leave it on there. Dr. Positano, thank you so much for jumping in and talking with us. We so appreciate it. Dr. Rock Positano, he's director of the Joe DiMaggio Non-Surgical Foot Service at the Hospital for Special Service Surgery. Excuse me. He's also the author of Dinner with DiMaggio, which we talked about with him a few years ago.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern. Listen on Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, and the Bloomberg Business app. Or watch us live on YouTube.
And you'll remember that in June of 2021, the Supreme Court cleared the way for college athletes to benefit from the use of their name, image, and likeness. This is NIL. We've talked about this before. Since then, 20-year-olds have earned six, sometimes seven figures on such deals to shout out brands on Instagram, sign autographs, or hop on Zoom with a few fans. I mean, they're finally being able to make money off of their success at the college level.
Here's the thing, though, Carol. Even though pro tennis players are some of the top earning athletes of all time, college tennis players are not the ones raking it in.
No.
That's pretty much reserved for college football and basketball players. That's according to data from Open Doors. It's a LinkedIn Nebraska-based marketing platform for athletes.
All right, so let's get to it, because Richard Kett knows all about this. He's legal counsel and marketing consultant at SANL, student athlete name, image, and likeness. On the growth of what we are seeing in this, in college sports specifically, he joins us on Zoom in Connecticut. He's also the author of tennis books, including Federer and Nadal, Inside the U.S. Open, and Roger Federer Back on Top. Needless to say, he loves the game of tennis. And I think yesterday you might have caught him behind us waving hello. And we're sorry we didn't get to talk with you, Richard, in person, but so glad we could get to you here. How are you?
Great. How are you guys?
We're doing well. We're doing well. I mean, it's another, you know, record year for the U.S. Open in terms of participation. Tell us about your world, though, and how things have continued to evolve since that Supreme Court ruling.
Oh my goodness, Carol, it is the wild, wild west, and I emphasize the word wild. The landscape changes every day. In the conference realignment that we saw this morning, you know, with Stanford and with Cal and with SMU joining the ACC, this is all derivative of what went on when the U.S. Supreme Court decided that Alston case 9-0. Think about it. This factionalized Supreme Court decided a case 9-0.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's get back to the idea that tennis players are, you know, not the ones cashing in on this. As I said earlier, it's really all football and basketball in college. Why is that?
You know, they're the revenue sports. Our methodology has indicated about 70% college football, 20% men's basketball, and 10% the rest with lacrosse, soccer, and women's basketball. So I can't even tell you if tennis is 1% of this paradigm.
That's incredible, given that here we are at the U.S. Open, Carol.
Right.
As John Wertheim is going to remind us in just about an hour, maybe even less than an hour, actually.
Yeah.
This is the most attended sports event in the United States. Five of the top 100 highest paid athletes of all time are tennis players.
Right. So then why?
Roger Federer is a billionaire. He's earned $1 billion, I should say. I don't know if he's a billionaire, but why doesn't that translate to college and to the interest in college?
Well, when we say the most attended sports event, the U.S. Open is also an event which overshadows the fact that it's a tennis event. People go there to be seen. Mm-hmm. People go there to go to the restaurants, to go to the stores there, as much as they go to see the good tennis. So I don't think you're going to be saying that about the events in, let's say, Atlanta or Washington, D.C., where the attendance is down. So that's just my comment about the U.S. Open. It is a tremendous event foreshadowing a tremendous tennis tournament. But in terms of college tennis, yes, it's big in the SEC. Yes, it's big in the ACC at some of the schools, but it's simply not a revenue sport. And to the extent that it is gaining NIL money. You are. The good news is, and I think there's a player at Ohio State that this pertains to, you may be keeping kids in school a little bit longer than joining the actual pro tour, because if they can make some NIL money, they may stay in school another year of college, because college tennis is pretty rigorous at the highest level.
Richard, does NIL money change depending on the school that you're at and that you play? Even with tennis, does it matter the school that you're coming from?
Carol, let's make one thing clear. NIL money comes from the boosters. It does not come from the university yet. If we do this call in 3 years, the universities will be involved. They will be inculcated, and Title IX might become an issue. Right now, though, it's the booster money. So you're looking at the schools with the biggest boosters, the Michigans, the Alabamas, you know, maybe Kansas in basketball, that have most of the major NIL money flowing to the student athletes through a third party conduit.
Hold on, you said yet. not yet from colleges and universities.
What's going to happen?
Yeah, what's going to happen?
2 or 3 years down the road, revenue sharing. We're going to see a piece of the TV contract. Let's take the Big Ten. I'm a Rutgers person. Rutgers gets $100 million from the Big Ten. Most of that is TV revenue. You're going to see between 5 and 12%, let's say, of that going to the student athletes. And you're also going to see the conclusion of a lawsuit that's pending in the federal system in the Third Circuit, in which student athletes are suing to become employees of the university. In other words, I work 30 hours a week on the football field for you, Mr. University, and my counterpart who works 30 hours in the library for your university, Mr. University, gets paid. So why shouldn't I get paid? Why shouldn't I have workers' comp? And that's gonna be decided in a year or so. Every one of these decisions.
Maybe the university would say you're getting a free education.
Absolutely. But that's just one part of it. You're getting the free, and that was the argument by the NCAA lawyer, and Justice Kavanaugh absolutely skewered that lawyer, saying, yeah, you're getting a free education, and Nick Saban is making $12 million. At the time, Mike Krzyzewski, who was coaching at Duke, was making $9 million, and Mark Emmert, the NCAA president, was making $3.5 million. So yeah, that's nice that you're getting a free education, but you're also paying these coaches loads of money, and loads of money is going into the university coffers.
You know, Richard, I wish we had more time. This is really a big topic, and as you said, it's going to continue to evolve, and hopefully it gets certainly more fair, if you will, to the actual athletes, the college athletes that are doing all of this.
I'm still waiting on my Division III tennis checks from Colby College for the 3 years I played there.
Don't hold your breath.
Yeah, we didn't really attract many fans, Carol, I'll be honest.
Richard, we got to run. Hopefully next time it'll be in person. Richard Kent, he's legal counsel and marketing consultant, as we said, covers the name, image, and likeness world when it comes to college sports, really giving us some great insight, joining us on Zoom from Connecticut. Carol Masser, along with Tim Stenovic. Tim's still waiting for this check.
Waiting for this check. I'll be waiting for a long time.
If you heard him, maybe.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
Yeah, how about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
You drive me crazy.
It's the question that drives us.
You drive me crazy.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, everybody, we've got just about 18 minutes left in today's trading session, getting ready to wrap up. this Jobs Friday, if you will. First trading day, though, in the month of September, but also wrapping up the week overall.
And yeah, so far up 0.3% on the Dow Jones. The S&P 500 up about 0.1%. We got the NASDAQ in the red, go, Carol, down 0.1%.
All right, so let's get to it. We've got David Dietz with us. He is a tennis fan. Back with us. Senior portfolio strategist at PPAC Private Wealth Management, a friend of the show. $10.7 billion in assets under management with us at the U.S. Open. Nice to see you back here.
A pleasure to be with you guys in person.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it is nice to do stuff, right, face-to-face. Talk to us. Let's go about the market environment and the jobs market. How does it significantly, if at all, change your thinking about what goes on in financial markets right now?
Well, certainly, I think we got a Goldilocks report this morning.
Oh, you know what that means. We all have to drink a shot.
There you go. It's Friday afternoon.
It's actually true, David.
No, everybody keeps
saying
it's a rule. It's a Goldilocks report.
So, you know, and so we had job creation, but on the other hand, the unemployment number went up to 3.5 to 3.8, which means people are coming back into the labor force. Why is that good? It's going to, you know, keep wage growth down if more people get off the sidelines. Also, of course, there was 110,000 jobs revised down off of the two prior months.
Those revisions are actually really important, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. When you factor those in into what we had seen was the dip from July to August in terms of jobs created, we are definitely seeing a cooling. And I think it's enough for the Fed definitely to be on the sidelines in September. It's not enough for them to say, hey, it's victory, we're done. It's just one metric.
Okay, so what are the metrics that will make the Fed say, okay, victory, we're done?
Well, you know, we're going to have the CPI later this month. That, of course, is the exact metric that they're looking for. They want that inflation rate to come back down to 2%. It's moving in the right direction, but at any time, of course, we could get a bad print. We've seen a sprint of consumer spending. People wanted to go see Taylor Swift and some of the other goodies this past summer. So we've seen some great spending. On the other hand, we do know that the kitties that the consumer had built up during the pandemic, they're starting to dwindle down. Wage growth is starting to slow. So we're probably going to see some slowing in consumer spending. And I think that's going to give the Fed confidence to not be as aggressive.
David, what do you think we spend too much time talking about, and what do you think we should be spending a lot of time talking about when it comes to the markets right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I think that number one, of course, is inflation, because inflation depresses profit margins. Inflation makes it tough for consumers to spend. So what are we spending too much time talking about? Probably what happened in the last month in terms of the market. You know, I think you do need to take a longer term point of view. And of course, what I really don't like is all the talk on the AI, because, you know, I've been around the block before here, and AI is going to make us so productive. It's going to be in take decades, you know, and a lot of this has already been priced in.
So the 200% run up in NVIDIA this year, 200 plus percent run up, I should say, warranted or not warranted?
You know, I think it's going to be very tough to make money from these levels. Sure, NVIDIA is going to do wonders with their chip designed for AI, but everyone in the world is going to be trying to match them with those same types of chips. We saw a lot of this in the Cisco run-up in the late 90s, where their
second person just in the last couple of days, Carol, to talk about the late 90s.
I know.
But here's what I said. Here's what I said yesterday. So is this pets.com all over again?
No, they have a genuine business. Pets.com had, you know, no revenues, no earnings,
but
and so forth.
But they did have
that
a sock
garbage.
Puppet.
Yeah, exactly.
Rather, excuse me.
Exactly. So, no, Cisco had a real business. NVIDIA has a real business. The problem is the competition is going to come in. And I think at this point, you know, you talk about 25 times, not earning sales. That's expensive.
Except if AI does pan out to be akin to something like the growth of the internet. And to be fair, AI, not a new thing. It's been around. This is just taking it to another level. We've done segments on quantum computing. Like, it all plays in. Like, I think about how much the internet is a part of our world now, right? We just take it for granted. In the early days, I think we were still trying to figure it out. There is the possibility that this is something that really does, right?
Yeah.
Exponentially impact productivity, growth, maybe new avenues. Right? Like, we have to be kind of smarter about it.
But as an investor, the question is, how do I make money from it? And often it's some of the ancillary businesses that can most use AI. For example, why are we seeing that strike in the film industry? Because those actors and actresses think that they may be out of work because of AI. So maybe some of the media companies, which have been beaten down. Look, Disney's at, what, a multi-decade low or something like that,
right,
may be able to take advantage of AI. So maybe you should look at the people who make the picks and shovels and not the actors. actual gold miners.
Can we talk stocks? Because we only have about a couple of minutes left here. Because you do like some names that are very familiar to our audience. Pfizer. It's down about 30% so far this year. I'm thinking about the Medicare price negotiations impact. Some of Pfizer's drugs are part of that. Also, they had a plant damaged by a tornado that's maybe going to be back up and running in the fourth quarter. Why do you like this one? Is it a valuation call?
Well, I mean, Pfizer is one of the top blue chip pharmaceutical companies.
Absolutely.
And of course, they have a strong R&D pipeline. But what makes them even better is that their marketing efforts, not just in this country, worldwide, they have the best sales force. That's why BioNTech, who had that vaccine, came to Pfizer so they could get off the ground. So right now, Pfizer is being treated as like a one trick COVID pony. But we know there's so much more. But valuation is strong. 11 times earnings when the market's knocking on 20, 4.5% dividend when the market 1.5.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that there, since the with the COVID proceeds, they bought about 8 different companies, including Seagen, which is not closed. So I think they're going to have some things that really surprise us. In terms of the Medicare negotiations list and so forth, that's not a positive to the industry. But in terms of Pfizer, the one drug that they thought was going to be part of the negotiations was not. I can hardly pronounce it, so I'm not going to try to right now. But the point is that I think a lot of that is priced in. Of course, all eyes are on next year's elections. We'll see how it works out. But there's a lot of the industry and people who are against that negotiations and effective price controls.
Okay, before we let you go, one more stock, Citizens Financial, down 27% year to date. Why are you bullish?
Yeah, so a lot of babies have been thrown out with the regional bank, smaller bank, Bathwater. Citizens Financial, that's been around since 1828, the Civil War, the Great Depression. It's been through trials and tribulations before. Meanwhile, of course, it's got 11 states, 5 million customers, and there's some of those relationships cannot be duplicated. You got a 6.5% dividend. I think if they just get up to 1x book value, you go from the upper 20s into the mid-30s and have a nice return.
So even the warnings that seem to be coming from officials, we did a Bloomberg exclusive story talking about the Fed issuing a slew of private warnings, and that included a Citizens Financial. You're not worried about some repercussions from that?
We're worried about everything, but we think that they're high-quality underwriters and that their loan book is going to hold up really well.
So you're not worried that much?
Yeah, we worry about everything, but it's priced in. 45 early
you
February,
think it's
now
in.
It's 27.
All right, listen, enjoy the Open. We know your daughter is here as well, so have fun with her.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, enjoy the match. Any calls you want to make? Who are you watching?
You know, I have to tell you, as I walked in, 50 years of equal pay in women's tennis. That made us feel so good. I was with my daughter and said, it wasn't always this way. These things are different and they're better.
I love that. David Dietz, thank you so much. PPAC Private Wealth Management.
This is the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Available on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Listen live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern. On Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, TuneIn, and the Bloomberg Business app. You can also watch us live every weekday on YouTube and always on the Bloomberg Terminal.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.